born down in Adelaide Town. The first kick he got, he was best on ground. North just get beat too much. At least they got this kid just coming up.
Horn in the SA. Horn in the SA.
Jeez, and we thought he put himself out there with his Phantom Draft. We hadn't seen nothing, as they say in the classics, Kingy.
I thought you were in trouble with your Omar.
Oh, no.
Cal.
I tell you what, Cal Toomey put himself out there with that. His good mate, Riley Beveridge, of course, having a bit of fun. Jason Horn Francis will be taken with pick one in tonight's National Draft. And this man needs no introduction. He joins us on the line. He's been with the busiest man in Australia. Cal Toomey, welcome.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks, Kingy. I'm going to watch that back.
So, I wouldn't.
Anyway.
A lot of fun, mate.
We have a little bit of fun every year. Yeah, no. We try and just put ourselves out there. And we have a lot of serious draft chat, but within that, a couple of minutes of fun as well.
Oh, we love that. We do. We love it. And you put yourself out there, as I said. And you do each and every year at this time of the year with your Phantom Draft and answering everyone's questions. And we really appreciate you coming on today because, as I say, we know you've been absolutely under the pump. So a lot of questions have come in, Cal, as we've been talking throughout the morning. A lot of them concerning live trading, which is difficult to get a grasp of. I know you're fascinated with how Hawthorn might approach things tonight, and Richmond have got a hand as any. So we'll get to the order of things in a moment, but what do you think the story could be tonight when it concerns live trading and such?
Live trading, there'll be a watch on if Richmond can move up the board at all. There's been talk of Adelaide doing something with Richmond for a long time now. Richmond approached them during the trade period to nudge up the order from 7 to 4. That was knocked back. So there's been some murmurings around that, and they continue to be murmurings. I don't think at this point, unless something happens pretty late as a curveball, that there'll be some movement within the top 10. That would surprise me at this point if there's any movement within the top 10. After that, though, there is some conversations potentially around clubs shifting back or shifting up. We know the Giants pick 13. Is definitely on the table at the right price. So that could also be for a future first-round pick. So a club from next year could rip its first-round pick out of next year and take 13 off the Giants. Obviously, the Giants future traded into their way to pick two for tonight's draft. So that's worked well for them over the last 12 months. But that's an option for them. Or they could slide back from 13 to later in the teens and maybe still get the player they want. So that's where you look at a club like Melbourne, potentially, who's mastered the art of trading up the board over the last few years. They could potentially move up the board if the right player's there. It all is dependent, Sam, of course, on whether the right player's there on the night. So there are a couple to keep an eye on, particularly in that second half of the first round.
Cal, well done on all your preview stuff. It's been first class again this year. I heard you talk about this particular top 20, 25 players having tiers or layers to them. Can you just break down for those listening why it's so important for, say, a Richmond to jump up and get into that top 4 selection rather than stay at 7 where they are, given your tiers discussion?
Yeah, I think you are picking in a different block of players at that point. There's no doubt it's tier A right at the top or layer A right at the top is the Jason Horn Francis, Nick Dacos conversation. Then I think the next group is a couple of players in Finn Callahan and Sam Darcy. Obviously, two of those four names are off the table when father-son bidding comes around. But after that, there's probably a really even group of 5 to 6 or 7 players that might come through. But there's Josh Rochelli, there's Josh Gibkiss, there's Ben Hobbs potentially, there's Josh Ward, Matt Johnson for some clubs, Jai Amos for other clubs. But there is a difference sometimes between what clubs are viewing right at that top end, the Josh Rochelli type. I think if Richmond was to move up, they'd be looking at either Josh Rochelli or Josh Ward, if they can get up a little bit further. Otherwise, they might get the player in their next layer that they like enough in Josh Gibkiss or Ben Hobbs. After that, though, Kingy, there's probably another layer from about pick 12 to 25, which is really, really even. And that's why, as much as we talk about the pick swaps, there might not be as much action as we like to see in terms of that because of the ability to get a player that they really like anyway. So that's where it is in the eye of the beholder, but it's such an even group in that top 25.
We're speaking to afl.com.au's Cal Toomey. All thanks to Tyre Power, your number one draft pick for tyre safety. So, Cal, a lot of the build-up has, of course, been around the father-son bidding? Who's going to do it? When's it going to come? Is it going to be for Sam Darcy? Is it going to be for Nick Daigos? So as we sit here now at 8:08 a.m. on draft day, how do you see it's going to play out with the bidding?
Yeah, I expect the Giants to call out the name of Sam Darcy at pick number 2 and then follow that up with, of course, Finn Callahan, who will become a Giant. That'll leave the Bulldogs with some work to do in terms of their points. It's not the ideal scenario for them. I think if the Giants didn't bid on Sam Darcy, he probably would have got through to Hawthorn for them to bid on. So there is a bit of a gap and difference there in terms of what it means for the Dogs, and they will trade up pick 23 to the Geelong Footy Club once the gates open tonight to boost their points and make sure they can cover that very early bid. After that, though, I expect the Suns to bid on Nick Daigos. That'll be pick 4 in the end, which is a great result for Collingwood. Mm. And it's an absolute boost in terms of their draft. And we talk about the Dogs and that not working in their favour. Well, it does work in the favour of Collingwood, whose picks won't go back as far late in the piece to match that bid. But it also, I think history will reflect on it interestingly when, Daigos is pick 4. I think it'll be that one that where it's just the way the father-son bidding system works now. I don't think clubs like going back-to-back on bids, particularly at the top end. The Giants have been talking about Sam Darcy as a real list need for a long while, and he's certainly a really, really talented player. So there's a little bit of bidding happening in those first 4 selections, I think, tonight, Sam. Mm.
Who's the bolter? Where do we get the shock? There's always one that sometimes can go as high as Will Phillips did for the Kangaroos. All the way up to 3, is someone that probably could jump into the top 10. Is there a name that you've got, Cal, on your board that you might see earlier than expected?
I'm hoping there's no Will Phillips shock tonight, Kingy, because it might throw out the rest of the order.
It did make a change, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. It certainly did. There was a real ripple effect last year in terms of that top group. But the one that we'll be looking at is Campbell Chesser at West Coast. There's a couple of players that I think West Coast would look really, really strongly at if they're there. Nazai Wanganeen Malira, Neil Erasmus. They're the options there potentially. But if Campbell Chesser was still on the board too, he probably hadn't been linked to the Eagles right at that sort of pick 10, 11, 12, wherever they end up after the bids. He hadn't been linked there until the last sort of 48 hours or so. So that's one to keep an eye on for sure. He's a Victorian player. Had a really interrupted season because of knee injuries, and he's only played probably 6 or 7 games in the past 2 years, but athletically so gifted, a huge size off the halfback or wing, and there's a lot of rebound to him. So, yeah, he could be a little bit of a surprise, but inside the top 10, I think we're all talking about the right names this year.
Cal, a stack of questions are coming in. So these are obviously without notice, so don't hesitate to skip on to the next one if you feel the need. Gary's text in saying, hoping to get Josh Gibkus to the Saints, future key defender, exactly what we need. Do they have a chance?
Yeah, they have a chance, absolutely. He could get through Richmond, and then the choice will be for the Saints. Do you take the key defender in Gibkus, or do you take the silky wingman in the Nazai Wanganeen Malira, or even Josh Goda as a halfback slash wingman? So there's a few list needs, I guess, for the Saints, and that'd be a big call for them. But I think either of those guys, particularly if it's a Gibkus versus Wanganeen call, would be a good addition for the Saints.
Where have you got Mac Andrews on your board? Because he's one that's hard to place.
Yeah, I think he's going to the Suns after they bid on Nick Daigos. So they've been weighing up Josh Gibkus as a key back versus Mac Andrew, who probably starts his career as a key back, to be honest, as a 200-centimetre, athletic, agile, capable marking player in defence, maybe an intercept player, but in time becomes a ruckman who can just get around the ground and do most things. He could even be a Nick Cox type on the wing. So I think he's headed to the Suns, and obviously Melbourne Next Generation Academy player will go in the top 5, and the Demons won't get a chance to match that bid. So, yeah, a really good story for him, and he's been an absolute bolter. We talk about bolters, King. He's won from the start of the season to now. It's been an amazing rise, so a really exciting prospect, and yeah, I think there'd be a lot of people really interested to see how he goes in the next few years.
Cal Domi's asking if North will really consider Jesse Motlop with pick 20 after that. He points out they delisted Uncle Shannon in 03. They traded Dad Daniel in 05. As there's still some lingering resentment from the Motlop family towards North Melbourne, he's asking the question there, Dom. Who else around that mark is a safer option, he's asking?
Well, it's a whole new footy club in a lot of ways. So it's a long time ago. And if you need the right player, you pick him. And I know they've been looking at a small forward. So whether they bite off a small forward with their second pick or try and get one through to the 40s, that's an option for them. I don't think Jesse Motlop's going to be there in the 40s, though. Some other guys around that mark could be Sam Butler, who's a pressure forward slash midfielder who could still be on the board there. Jacob Van Rooyen's a key back slash a bit of a swingman, really. He can play forward too, who could be off interest too, right in that range. But yeah, Jesse Motlop's had some interest from the Roos, and they have been looking at a small forward at some point of the draft.
Dave has texted in, Cal, all but a given. He says that the Crows will trade pick 4 for Richmond 7 and 15.
Is that right? Well, he might do the Phantom next year then. I hope he does.
That'll be a big story. That drops.
Well, look, there's been discussions for a fair while now, and I don't think Richmond would be at a point, though, at this stage where they give up 7 and 15 to get up the three spots. Maybe 6 weeks ago, they would have been more open to that, but given what you can see the list is going to be at this point of the draft proceedings, it's 12 hours away now where they'll know which players they're going to get. I'd be surprised about that, particularly if they weren't getting something back in return by doing that. Mm. So if you're doing that, though, it would suggest, though, that the Crows would be pretty comfortable with Josh Sinn or Ben Hobbs getting through to pick 7, because Josh Rochelli won't be.
What about the Saints? Will they have some luck given the change in the rules to the top 20 bid matching with the...
How close is this going to be, Cal, with their NGAs?
Yeah.
I think Saints fans can breathe a little bit easy across today. I would be relaxing if I was a Saints fan. I can't see the bid coming within, or the pick coming from Machito Owens inside the top 20. So I think they're going to be okay unless something absolutely surprises me. There's been some interest for him. This is Owens, the NGA player. He's a 190 midfielder. He had a great game for Vic Metro mid-season. To be honest, if he didn't play that game, he was a late call-up. He had 29 touches and about 10 marks. He was a late call-up to that game. If he hadn't played, there would have been none of this discussion, I think, in the second half of the season. But he did play. He played really well. There's some clubs who've looked at him in the back end of the first round, the Giants and Tigers, maybe even the Swans. But I think he's getting through to the 20s. And at that point, the Saints will be able to match a bid for him under the rules. And Marcus Windhager, the same. He's probably more in the 20 to the 35 bracket as it stands. So I think they're going to be okay. And if they do, fingers crossed for them, they'll end up with a really good draft, I think, because they can't go wrong at their first pick. And then the next couple would be really good additions as well.
A lot of messaging here coming through on the text machine about Essendon and Adrian Dodoro. Adrian Dodoro moment. I'm not sure what that means.
Been quiet.
Been very quiet, Adrian. I'm not even sure he's around.
Pick 11, though, Cal, for the Bombers.
What are they looking at?
Yeah, what are they looking at, position or player-wise?
I think they're in a really good spot to actually, I know this might sound like sitting on the fence, but they're in a really good spot to actually see who slips through. And it is a really, as we were talking about before, there's not much that separates that group. Is it Matt Johnson, a midfielder from WA, another WA midfielder, and Neil Erasmus could still be there. Josh Sinn, there's definitely interest there as a halfback. Could they jump in ahead of Port Adelaide? That's a possibility. He's a rebounder. I think they've been looking for one of them if they can find one. Josh Goda is in that mix as well as a halfback from the Calder Cannons, who's pretty athletic. And then maybe just wait and see if someone like Ben Hobbs did slip through a little bit, or Josh Gibkiss. I don't think Gibkiss would be right in their range, given that they took 4 talls in last year's draft, but one of the midfield slash halfback options, I think, would be a chance. And also Nazai Wanganeen-Miller. We know the Bombers like a little bit of romance with some of their picks sometimes, and getting the nephew of Gavin Wanganeen at the club, and a player who would be worthy of a spot on their wing. Having him and Nick Cox on opposite wings would be one of the best skilled pairings, I think, in the competition. So that'd be a good chance if he was there and available.
He's not in your top 30, this man, but geez, we've had a few texts about him. Leek Alia, Cal. Have you got a line of sight on Leek Alia? North supporters texting in, Carlton supporters texting in. What do you think of Leek Alia's prospects?
Yeah, I think he gets taken. He's a difficult one to place, though, because it's going to be more of a need in some ways in terms of the pickup there, and working out the clubs that really sort of value or need to value that position is not as easy as just the talent rating sometimes. So, look, he's going to have some interest, I think, 20 onwards, and that's probably where his sort of landing spot is. as we've spoken about so much, the leap and the intercept grab is definitely his weapon. And he's played some senior footy now for a season at Central District and impressed, you know, across the year. So I think he's somewhere in the 20s to 30s, and someone will pick up a player who's in a lot of ways ready-made with his work in the air.
Cal, we were talking before, you know, between 6 and 7, about the knowledge of the draft this year from the average AFL fan. Do you feel like it's grown this year far more than any other year?
I think so, and I'd like to think so. It's an area that, every year offers a fair bit of enthusiasm and hope and fresh blood. And what can, I think draft night, I mean, you've worked plenty as well, Sam, myself as well, Kingy. It's an absolute night of, you know, hope for the clubs and supporters, and it's probably the happiest night on the footy calendar. No one ends up a loser at all. Everyone's a winner afterwards and really happy with their selections. And it's all about, you know, could the guy we just picked up be the next Chris Judd, or could they be Sam Walsh, or could they be Jacob Wiedering, or one of these guys at the very top end who can turn around our footy club, or could we've just picked up a Dane Swan type late in the draft? So, yeah, I think the interest levels have certainly grown, and we've had a lot of time to study and get to know the performances of the Victorian players, because we've probably overanalyzed the 7 or 8 games they've played in the first half of the season so much to an inch of their life. So we know those players back to front in terms of what they've actually done out there in the field. So, yeah, I think it's growing, and the only way is up as well, I think, Kingy. So it's great for the game that, you know, we're nearly at December, and this is a really dominant storyline in our city.
Cal, you've worked feverishly. You've been absolutely everywhere. And a reminder here, by the way, you don't want to miss the NAB AFL Draft Countdown. It's from 12:10 p.m. Eastern, ahead of the NAB AFL Draft Night, live tonight from 6:30 p.m. AFL website. I have it absolutely covered yesterday.
Is there an encore to the Born in the...
There might be something later on, will it?
An encore?
Well, that's top of the pops at the moment, that one. It's going to take some knocking off, I reckon. Cal, really appreciate you fitting us in, mate. As I say, you've been really generous with your time, so we appreciate it. And best of luck tonight, and can't wait to see the stories that unfold.
Thanks, guys, and can promise no more singing for this year.
Yeah, Cal Toomey
born
there.
Born down in Adelaide Town.
Good on you, mate.
The first kick.
Joining us for Tyre Power. Draft 3 tyres, get your 4th tyre free on Falcon passenger tyres. And I'll tell you what, Kingy, the WBBL season, they're playing for sheep stations now. We are coming down to the pointy end, and our girls, the Melbourne Renegades, well, they're going to play the winner of the Eliminator, which is the Brisbane Heat and Adelaide Strikers today. Renegades are kicking back in the Challenger, which they will, quote-unquote, host at the Adelaide Oval tomorrow. It's been that sort of season. But their skipper has been kind enough to join us, Sophie Molyneux, and she joins us here for Mate award-winning Aussie Service mobile plans from just $20. Thanks for joining us, Sophie.
G'day, guys. Thanks for having me.
How's the countdown going?
Yeah, it's going okay. It's a weird feeling going into a final and not knowing who you're playing, but we'll be watching together tonight, and girls got a bit of training today, and we're ready to go, I think.
You're well versed in the art of, I guess, travelling, certainly, hanging around, and you're going to host an interstate final. I mean, obviously due to the border restrictions, we don't need to bang on about, but you haven't been able to host a game in Melbourne for the entire season. Is it ended up working in your favour, as I'm sure, as challenging as it was initially?
Yeah, I suppose it has. It depends how you look at it. I think like most of us had to sort of quarantine, and we're all coming from different states and everything, but that feels like 5 years ago now. But we've sort of been on the road together as a group for 6 weeks, and I think it's sort of played into our hands, because we've all gotten along really well and been able to create a really cool vibe around the team. We just sort of want to make the most of these last, you know, this last week together, and hopefully come away with a win.
So if it looks like it's really worked for you, I was just having a look at the notes before, and second bottom last year and second place this year. It's been a fantastic turnaround, and you've taken all before you, as you said, with those challenges. But what do you put that down to? What's been the radical improvement this year?
I suppose we made a few changes. New coach, a few new players, and just a change of list. And I suppose it's T20 cricket as well. Yeah, a bit fickle, and there's not too much difference between your best and your worst. And I think this year it's it's been really good for us. And I actually do think that the time on the road together has really helped, and the team's really gelled. And Simon Helmet as coach has been awesome. So, yeah, I suppose things have just sort of clicked a little bit better this year.
Tell you one thing that's helped, and that's Harmanpreet Kaur. She's an absolute star. Tell us about what she's been like to play alongside.
Yeah, she's awesome. I think obviously the numbers and the runs and wickets are pretty self-explanatory. She's been pretty pretty valuable to us, and same as Jemima Rodriguez, who's also from India. But I think it's their off-field stuff that's been really great for, I think, quite a young squad and an impressionable squad. So to be able to, you know, play cricket alongside the captain of India, it's been really cool for the girls to just, yeah, to watch and learn, I suppose.
What's the day look like? So the opposition play today, or the contenders play today, that you'll get an opportunity at tomorrow in effectively the preliminary final, is how we'd sort of
in footy speak,
in footy speak, to dumb it down for us footballers. What's the plan today? How do you watch the game as a group, or do your own thing?
Yeah, we've got a bit of training today, and then we'll probably come straight off the track and watch it. So, and we'll probably watch it as a group. I think we've only got a few days left together, and I think we'll try and make the most of it. So, we'll tune in tonight.
So, as good as your season was, Sophie, which we touched on, and it absolutely was, you lost your last two. So, going into this final tomorrow, have you sought to sit down and address that, or is it just the fact that this game's so wildly unpredictable? You know, sometimes there's factors outside of your control, or is there some things that you've sought to address going into this one?
Yeah, a little bit of both. I think we all sort of understand that during the Big Bash, I think most teams have a bit of a wave. And, I suppose that sort of come at the back end of the round matches, which you'd prefer than tomorrow night. So, I suppose we sort of rode that a little bit and learnt a lot. I think it was quite valuable, some of the stuff that we got out of those matches in Mackay. And we've also just parked it as well. So, we're pretty keen to just get back out there and obviously learn from the last couple of games. But we know what we need to do to sort of get back to our best.
Being on the road for so long, it would bring some different challenges. Can you tell us a bit about the group? Because obviously there'll be some things going on that'll be amusing, and there'll be some things that are dead set annoying.
Yes, that's right.
We would like to know a little bit of both, if you could help us out, Sophie.
Oh, dear. I don't know where to start. I feel like... we've had a really good time. We've sort of, between matches, we've had a couple of breaks and extended breaks where we've sort of found ourselves in the hills of Adelaide, and
yes.
We've sort of
say no more.
Made sure we've done a bit of touristy things here and there, but all in all, we've got a really good group, and you combine it with the Indians and Eve Jones from England, and a couple of the young ones, Poppy Gardner, who's a Melbourne girl, who's 16 and just loving life out of school, I think. So, it's been great. So
basically been at the wineries, isn't it? Basically what Sophie's saying.
That's what's kept it going.
I promise there's been some cricket going.
Hey, I'm fascinated by your, I guess, background, Sophie, and your path that you took to get here. So you grew up out in Bairnsdale. You were effectively born into the game, weren't you? Your old man is as passionate as anyone about the game, isn't he? Wasn't he?
Yeah, he loves it. He's sort of, actually the borders have opened up, so mum and dad are coming over, and a lot of people from Melbourne are coming over to watch, awesome. Which would be really cool. But I suppose, growing up in a country town, I think all you do is play sport and go to school and repeat. So I think dad was a massive role in that, and playing for the West Bairnsdale Career Club, it's like a second family to me, which I love going back home to see everyone. But no, it was pretty self-explanatory country upbringing, I think.
I did hear, Sophie, that maybe being on the road hadn't affected you as much, being from Bairnsdale, and you hadn't missed it that much.
Oh, David.
Well, that's just what I'm hearing. Any truth to that?
it's been great.
Lovely town, Bairnsdale.
In the Adelaide Hills.
Yeah, I do live in Melbourne. I do miss Bairnsdale, but Bairnsdale will always be home, but it's not going too far, that's for sure.
So you were talent spotted ridiculously early. We're talking 10 years of age here.
I sort of can't really remember back then, but
right.
I was playing a bit of men's cricket and boys' cricket back then, and I think just sort of crept into the underage sort of system and, yeah, sort of went through the age groups there.
Yeah.
Sophie, can you answer a question for me? So Sammy's young fellow is just taking up cricket. He's 9 years of age. He's been given a sheet to hand out as to what his goals are for the year. Playing cricket at nine.
Yeah, and done well, though, Sophie, like tastefully done it, asked in a way that would relate to a nine-year-old. Is that something that you would have had back in your day?
Is it a bit early, do you think?
Not quite. Sounds a little bit like what we need to do now is set out our goals and plans for the year, but... Yeah, I'm not sure what my goal would have been back at that age.
Well, I don't know if Hattrick was on there because you took one of those as a youngster.
I don't think that was on the goal sheet. But
well, we wish you the best of luck.
Good luck.
We wish you the best of luck tomorrow out in the Challenger, of course. And we can't wait to see how it goes. You've had a great season. You'll play the winner of the Heat and the Strikers, of course, and then the Perth Scorchers are waiting at Optus Stadium in the big one. Can't wait for that one on the 27th of November as well. Thanks for being so generous with your time, Soph.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Win it and straight back to the hills, I reckon.
Yeah. Sophie was here for Mate, Australia's most satisfied NBN customers. Internet from just $59. Search Mate online. Zlatan Ibrahimovic, even if you're not overly familiar with him, you've heard of him, and that is because he's one of the more fascinating figures in world sport. Unique, funny, charming, insanely good at what he does, which is play at the very top of world football for the biggest clubs. He also has strong conviction. He was clashed with LeBron James recently over whether athletes should weigh into political issues. He's one of the most decorated footballers in the world. He's still doing it at the age of 40, and not many get the chance to sit down with Zlatan for an extended chat, but this man did. In fact, he's done it twice, Kingy. Donald McRae, long-time author, interviewer with The Guardian. Duncan, welcome to the show. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot for having me on.
And Donald joining us at Kingy for Chemist Warehouse, the real house of fragrance this Christmas. So, Donald, you've written 12 books, interviewed a stack of sporting subjects. What's Zlatan like?
He's up there with people like Mike Tyson, Sonny Bill Williams, you know, that kind of stature person who is a mythic figure, but actually when you get to know them, there's a complex human being inside. And as you summed it up beautifully, you know, he's funny, he's combative, he's articulate, and you never know what you're going to get with him. And so I went to Milan last Thursday, and I was told he was in a bit of a bad mood. So I thought, oh dear, this is not going to go too well. But as soon as we started, you know, he was just so engaging and wanted to talk about so many things. So I love talking to him.
Yeah, and he's the king of the one-liners, which I know my colleague here, Kingy's fascinated with. He's going to roll back on a few of those this morning as well. But
sure. He's
speaking about how he's been re-energised at AC Milan and the young squad that he's got alongside him there. And he said to you, "This morning I had pain everywhere, but as long as I have objectives, as long as I have adrenaline, I keep going. I know I'm coming to something good. I'm coming to somewhere I need to work to keep myself at the top." So for all the jovial nature of him, he's the uber professional, isn't he?
He is, absolutely. And that was a sign of, you know, the human being inside the famous footballer. Because there was no hiding away from the fact that he suffers a lot. He is in pain, and he was genuinely wincing. And it made me understand what it must take for him at the age of 40 to be playing at this elite level. And I like that about him, because he could have easily have said, oh, no, I'm in fantastic shape. But he made me understand that each day it's kind of a battle. But because he's playing with these young Italian footballers, I think they just kind of galvanize him, and they in turn are in awe of him because he does work hard. And I think that's why that intensity of hunger has kept him at the top for, I think it's 22 years now.
Yeah, one thing I really liked in it, before I hand over to Kingy, Donald, is the fact that he obviously played with the great defender Paolo Maldini. He's now playing with his son Daniel, which is amazing. And you put it to him that there might be an ambition to keep going until the next Maldini arrives and the miracle of Zlatan will be complete. And he says, typically, it's already a miracle. And and then he has not many. I just love the lateral thinking of the man. And then he picks up your notebook and you've got 48 questions stretched across three pages. And he tells you you've brought a whole book with you.
We had quite a joke on it because on the cover of the book, which had been bought for me many years ago. My teenage daughter had written, "I'm a busy man," because they're always kidding me, "I'm working too hard." So he loved that. And so we had just such a, you know, it wasn't a question answer sort of situation. It was a conversation. We spoke about kids and life and death and all kinds of things. And but yeah, he is the king of the one-liners. And you know, when I made the little quip, "Hang on till the son of Daniel comes along," you know, there'd be a miracle. Well, it's complete in his eyes anyway. So you got to love it.
That's where I want to go, Donald. I love some of his one-liners, and he's got so many of them. There's a list online here of about 40 of them. "I can't help but laugh at how perfect I am" was one of them. Sammy, you liked this one. On his ex-girlfriend's engagement gift, he said, "What do you mean a present? She's got Zlatan."
She's already got Zlatan. Are they all legitimate, are they, Donald, or are some of them
are they made up?
Myth?
Well, I think some of them are perhaps made up. You know, there was a particularly good book called "I Am Zlatan," which came out a number of years ago. And he said to me, actually, the guy, the author who did it, he wasn't too happy with it because the author made up a lot of stuff. Oh. And then he said, actually, when I looked at it, it captured my spirit. It had my sense of humor, my ambition. So, yeah, I think with him, like a lot of, you know, hugely famous people, there's a bit of embellishment, a bit of myth-making. But I would say, at a guess, I would think 75% of those one-liners are from him because he is a funny man and, you know, he can churn them out just in the course of an interview.
I like this one. Donald, he says, "Only God knows who will go through." And the reporter says, "Well, it's hard to ask him." He says, "No. You're talking to him."
You're talking to him.
Did he give you? Did he, you did know, he give
the
you
thing
a few?
I like about. Sorry.
Did he give you a few?
No, well, actually, in a way, we perhaps had a more serious conversation. You know, he does make these jokes, and but actually, I think this interview, because I said to him, "Oh, I apologize, I'm going to ask you about your age." He said, "No, I actually want to talk about it," because he said, "I haven't actually done an in-depth interview since I've been 40. So there weren't too many sort of witty one-liners, but he's capable of them. But we had a lot of laughs along the way, as well as some quite deep conversation.
Well, Donald, we're nearly out of time, but this deserves more time. I love the exchange with Ian LeBron James, and they were divided over the role athletes play on the political side of things. And Zlatan said, "Athletes unite the world, politics divides it. Our role is to unite the world by doing what we do best. And athletes should be athletes and politicians should do politics." But he doesn't back away from that, does he?
No, and I challenged him on that because I don't believe that at all. I mean, I've interviewed LeBron James twice. And in many ways, him and Zlatan have quite a lot in common. And I was just quite disappointed that he made that statement. And then he came back at me, and then I explained that I'm from South Africa. I lived under apartheid. And sport was intensely political in South Africa in the 1970s. So he acknowledged that. And so we sort of, as I said in the piece, we agreed to disagree. But that's what I also liked about him, is that I could actually challenge him. And, you know, he didn't get upset. He just discussed it with me and stuck to his stance, and I stuck to mine.
Donald, we really appreciate it. Apologies, we're out of time, but really great to hear from you this morning. And well done on the story. It's a great read in The Guardian on Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Thanks a lot for your time this morning.
Thanks so much for having me on. Cheers. Bye-bye.